Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm your host, Brian C. Wood, and with me today is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. A week that was full of news from the House of Mouse.
Didn't see that coming.
No, not at all. Not with another major release coming out in like 3 weeks. But first, Chad, the Jedi, they must end.
We didn't talk about this last week. Yeah.
No. We had a Fast and the Furious movie that is a $500 million behemoth in the first weekend to cover.
This movie's going to make $1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Just like the last one did.
But I understood the last one. This is not supposed to happen.
Did you understand that by the nature of the numbers, it did less than $100 million domestic and over $400 million international?
Wasn't it less?
It's 535 million worldwide in the first weekend.
Okay, I knew that. I thought it was like right at 100 for domestic, and then the rest. Even though that's still like
400 to 100.
Yeah. Which
is not quite Transformers level, but it's almost Transformers level.
What did the last one make? I mean, that's
last Transformers made. I want to say 210 domestic.
Oh no, that's still too high. It was 1 something. But I meant the Fast. I think it was...
Oh, the last Fast and the Furious movie, I want to say it was like... it made $200 million domestic over the course of its lifetime.
Oh, the course of its lifetime?
Domestically, the opening weekend, if that's what you're asking, the opening weekend was 153.
Okay, that sounds right.
So, it was about a $50 million drop from Fast 7's opening to Fast 8's opening.
That
$50 million kind of accounts for the Paul Walker, word of mouth and tribute and all of that.
Yeah,
we knew that, and it's still the second highest domestic opening of their franchise.
And I expected that. The drop off doesn't surprise me. It's just that, you know, I didn't think this would make $1 billion. I knew Paul Walker's death and how it ties in this franchise, you know, gave it the bump, and everybody was surprised, made $1 billion. But I thought that was gone, and this was going to, like, love it out at, like, 7. But that's out the window.
You do understand that studios have conceded now. They have punted on Aprils in which there is a Fast and the Furious movie, so that helps.
Yeah, I understand that, and that is, while I understand it, that does not make it any less mind-boggling that this is the world we live in.
Yes, as Dan Le Batard said, when history looks back on civilization, they will realize, look at this as evidence that we were a very primitive people.
Yeah, I can't really argue that.
And it broke Star Wars' record for single opening weekend globally. Think about that. It beat Episode 7's first weekend take.
Now, on that regard... I don't remember what markets Episode 7 opened on the first day. I don't think it opened in China, and this one did. So, yes, it did it, but there's an asterisk, because it's not the same markets. So, fine. If you want to have it, it's true, but it's not really true.
So, let's get back to what we were talking about before we were talking about Fast and the Furious being a monster box office sensation that will only grow in anticipation for the 9th and 10th installments.
I'm only counting on 10 because you just got to take them to space.
Well, I mean, now both, as we said on the podcast, both Toretto and O'Connor have kids now. Yeah. So both can show up at some point in 9 or 10.
Yeah, by the logic they laid out in this movie, Vin Diesel's either got to retire, or that means Paul Walker's character can come back. One of those things is not happening, so... I
did like that they addressed Brian O'Connor in name in the movie. They were like, let's go talk to Brian, he'll know how to figure... No, we can't do that. We promise, no, we won't do that.
Yeah, but then by them mentioning him in that vein, it directly ties into, we can't talk to him because he's got a family and we're going to let him go to the side. Well, Dom, you got one, what you going to do?
One that your enemy knows personally that you have.
Yes. Has kidnapped him once before.
Yes.
before you even knew that existed.
Right.
Whatever.
Soap operas, gotta love them.
Whatever, it's, you know, it's fun, I don't care.
So, Chad, we have heard Luke Skywalker speak for the first time since 1983.
Yeah, when you put it like that, yes.
Your thoughts on Luke's one truth that the Jedi must end. Is Luke Skywalker on antidepressant medication now?
Okay, so my personal opinion is this is the magic of editing, and I believe this line is one of the first things Luke tells Rey when we start The Last Jedi. I think Luke is, at this point, Luke has been through, his dad has died in his arms after coming from the dark side. He started training a new order of Jedi led by his nephew, who turned out to go bonkers and kill the rest of the people that he was training and turn to the dark side. So I think Luke's a little jaded and like, well, this Jedi thing is clearly not working. So let's just, no, it just needs to die and be done with it.
Okay, so let's review. His father went to the dark side after being praised as being the savior of the whole thing.
Yeah, he will bring balance to the Force.
Right, right. And his mother died of a broken heart because his father turned to the dark side.
Can we not talk about that part?
And his adoptive uncle and aunt, who were moisture farmers on Tatooine, they were burned alive and killed because they were looking for the droids that were R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah, I forgot they did that.
That Luke kind of, you know, had gone off to go and find, and so wasn't there to protect the homestead when the stormtroopers came.
Well, let's be honest about that. There would have been no protection. There would have been a third body there.
Yeah. So then, not only do you have that, but his mentor, number one, Obi-Wan Kenobi, vanishes in front of his eyes at the hands of his father, who he does not know yet.
Which we can now say is death, because, you know, he's a ghost.
Yeah, he's a Force ghost. And then his second mentor, Yoda, also died at 900 years old.
He can get over that one. That was, you know, natural causes. I mean, 900 years old? Where's your time?
Mm-hmm. He lost his hand to his father, who lost his hand.
He lost a lot more than his hand.
Right.
But he's lost that the most.
Mm-hmm. And after Return of the Jedi, he did everything that everybody told him to do. He reestablished the Jedi Order. He started training young kids again. He was bringing the Force in the Jedi Temple back and reestablishing the Order, just like everybody had told him. He had a nephew who he started to train. And his nephew turned on him and then killed all of the people that he was training, except for one little girl who got taken away and hidden onto Jakku.
Unconfirmed.
And so, in all reality, what good has being a Force-sensitive person done for Luke Skywalker? What has the Force and the Jedi Order in particular done for him? It's cost him his father, it's cost him his mother, it's cost him his adoptive aunt and uncle, it's cost him both of his mentors, it's cost him his friends, you know, Wedge and such.
Yeah.
It cost him his hand.
He didn't know it yet, but he lost Han, so...
Right.
Yeah, so... for Luke Skywalker, being a Jedi sucks.
Right. And you are the last one of them. You are the last propagator of this religion.
Yeah. The suckage can end with me. And I think that's...
If I choose not to take on a Padawan, and I choose to let this end...
Then... all of this is over. Well, the Jedi part is over, and there's only one left, and he doesn't know everything, so
but
he could just die out.
But could that, in theory, end the whole thing? Without a yin to a yang, the First Order basically wins. Would they know how to react to not having the Force to encounter?
Well, they'll still have, you know, like, regular people resistance. But it does seem that the Force-sensitive Jedi are the ones that always swing the balance their way. But I think one can live without the other, particularly the Sith. They don't seem like they really need... They have regular people they can kill. They don't need to just kill Jedi. But from the movie canon, I mean, there were no Jedis for thousands of years. The Jedi just kind of flourished. So, in theory, they could function without the Sith. But for Luke in particular, I don't think so. I think he's just got that storm cloud over his head of Sith, and we're just going to do bad things to you for the rest of your life.
Well, I think... The interesting are the think pieces, which were inevitable, right? Oh, yeah. The think pieces that were inevitable about what this means. The idea, basically, that they could move past Jedi and Sith. That Snoke isn't a Sith leader or a Sith lord. That Kylo isn't training in the ways of the Sith. That Luke is done realize that there is so much more than just light and dark. That there is... being a normal person with Force-sensitive capabilities, not necessarily endorsing one side or the other, but using those powers to do the most good possible. It would be really interesting if they would move in the direction of, like, past the moniker of Jedi.
It would...
Because the first two trilogies are... predicated on the dichotomy between light and dark, mm-hmm. and predicated between Jedis and Sith. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole first prequel trilogy is about the revenge of the Sith, the rising up of the Sith, and the fall of the Jedi. And, you know, when your original trilogy starts, the Jedi are at their lowest point. They're down to two of them in the known galaxy. And the only person who knows where both of them are is Princess Leia's father, who gets blown up in the original movie, and they slowly rise throughout Empire and Jedi to reclaim their lost brother Anakin and once again become a prominent religion by a prominent force by having somebody who is now trained fully who can go out and train others and create a new order with younglings who are apparently no better at defending themselves than the younglings were in the prequel trilogy.
I mean, just by the very names, you would think, like, yes, maybe a normal person, they can take them. But, you know, an older Jedi who's, you know, a bit of a dick, not so much. I understand why people like this idea of, I've heard people call them, like, gray Jedi, some stuff like that. Somebody that walks the line in the middle.
Some of this, again, is you're getting into classic canon, expanded universe stuff that... is no longer canon, but could be pulled and culled from.
Yeah, so they can, I mean, they can, and I don't know all the expanded canon, there's just so much of that stuff, but just by, like, the movie canon and stuff, it would seem anybody that's dabbled in the dark side, there's no dabbling. They dabble and then they fall off into the dark abyss, so.
Fall off into the lava jet.
He didn't fall into the lava, he, you know, kind of just...
didn't realize that his opponent had the high ground.
That was so stupid. So stupid. Especially when the opponent says, I have the high ground, yield. Like, no, you ain't gonna do nothing. Jump. And I guess he did fall, because he did jump up and he just fell down like you just throw something on the ground, because he had one limb. And he roasted like a little cheap wiener on the 4th of July.
Hey. Let us be amazed that he was not booed out of the arena when he came out for the 40th anniversary panel. He was cheered. Now, yeah. Part of that was because he was with Ian McDiarmid. He was with the Emperor, but still, he got cheered.
I was good to put him with somebody else, but, you know, because he was there. You know what this means. And you know how much I don't like this, because logically, it doesn't make sense.
Are you indicating the fact that they brought him out as part of the 40th anniversary panel because they're preparing folks for him to be reintroduced into canon as Force Ghost Anakin Skywalker?
You mean reintroduced? He's already canon. Thank you, George. And it makes no sense. Absolutely none. I don't care that it's Hayden Christensen. It doesn't bother me at all.
He died as an old man. He did not die as a 20-something on Mustafar.
That is my only thing, and it sticks in my craw, and I'm just going to have to get over it. But King, and let's not forget that they did Hayden Christensen like right at the end of Revenge of the Sith, and Hayden Christensen's like 15 years older now. So explain to me how Force Ghost is going to age, because dang it, we're about to find out.
We're gonna be interested. I don't know. I'm not sold on that, because we know that Frank Oz is being noncommittal about whether or not he had a part, and Ewan McGregor is basically just going around saying, "Hey, that Obi-Wan standalone movie. If you want to do it, let's do it. We should totally do it. Do it now. Let's go ahead and get that done." You know, Kathleen Kennedy came out and said there's another Star Wars spinoff for 2020 that they're going to announce this summer, probably at either D23 or Comic-Con, and why not? You know, hey, everybody loves my interpretation of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Let's do this. But he's not saying anything about Episode 8. And we know that he did the voiceover work with Alec Guinness's recording for 7 in the flashback sequence. But if they're going to do Yoda, it has to be in Episode 8. It either has to be a flashback, or it has to be a Force Ghost Jedi Council.
I'm pretty sure we're getting Force Ghost. And I think we're getting all three. I think we're getting Yoda, I think we're getting Obi-Wan, and I think we're getting Anakin.
Which we beg the question, how often has Luke been talking to them? Because they have not been crystal clear in 7, probably because they hadn't figured it out themselves, about when Kylo killed all the kids, which caused Luke to walk away. They're never, like, real clear, like, this is 7 years ago, this is 8 years ago, this is 15 years ago. They're never clear about when the new Jedi Academy or Temple was taken out by the Knights of Ren, and when Luke went to R2.
Yeah. Because it seems like when that happened, that's also when Han left. I'm assuming it's been years. They never, concretely said how many years. And I think Kylo's like around 25-ish, something like that. So I would think it's between, 5 and 10 years, somewhere around there. Even so, if it's just 5, and Luke is on this island planet by himself, I'm assuming he's talking to the ghost. Because otherwise, he was probably taking a lightsaber to the brain. I know Jedi is supposed to be like sort of like monks, but you just can't sit there and not talk to somebody. So,
and R2 only beeps at you.
Yeah. Well, and R2's not even with him. R2's with Leia. So it's just him. And I'm pretty sure he's talking to the ghosts. But,
So you're not convinced they're going to do the deconstructionist, what is the Jedi thing?
I know it's an interesting idea. I don't think that's what people really want. I think people really want to see Luke Skywalker full-fledged as a Jedi, old man Luke, go and beat somebody down. I think that's what they want. And I think they want to see him train Rey, and probably train Rey the way that Yoda trained him, which was Yoda was not very helpful for most of that. And I think Luke's going to be the same way. Because there is a shot in the trailer where Karate Kid style, you see Rey training with the lightsaber, and you see Luke watching over her. So I would assume that she's won him over, he's training her, and he's probably not being all that nice to her while he's doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be really interesting to see where they go from here in terms of, obviously Hamill's going to be back for 9. He's already confirmed that. So we don't have to worry about, is this where Luke's going to bite it?
I mean, unless he's Force Ghost Luke.
Which is possible, but again, you're going to have a big enough problem because you have to get rid of Carrie now. So I don't think you want to sever all ties heading into 9.
No, I think if he was going to bite it before, that changed everything, but I think it's
an interesting, like I said, if you really stop and think about it and think of all the sacrifice that the life of a Jedi has cost Luke Skywalker, and you were in isolation for 5, 10, 12, 15 years, you would start to contemplate your own existence too. Not to mention the fact that you, when you, the moment you find out that your father is basically Space Hitler, that's gonna have some mental implications on you.
It is true.
So, but I thought the trailer was really about the same as the trailer we got at Celebration 2 years ago.
Was that
not the November one, not the Thanksgiving one, where you just had the "There's been an awakening. Have you felt it? The dark side and the light." Not that one. That's the November one, the Thanksgiving one. I'm talking about the one they had in April, that Celebration 2 years ago in Anaheim. Well, Chewie, we're home.
Home, yeah. So that's not the one that they've had the mashups of whichever Force Awakens trailer that was in this one. And they run them side by side.
The length of this trailer is about the same as the length for the Buy Your Tickets Now trailer in October.
Maybe that's that one. I don't know.
It's like 2 minutes long. It gives you just enough. Again, we've talked many times about the ability. This film doesn't need marketing. Slap Star Wars on something, as evidenced by Rogue One. People will show up. They may ask you questions about where it takes place in the universe, in the canon, but they will show up.
If they would have taken, there's a shot in the trailer of like Luke falling to his knees by R2, and that last shot of him like exiting the cave with just that one line. If they did that, the internet would have been on fire, on fire, and they could have just rolled with that until November, because all the fanboys would have been losing their minds. Like, what is this? You show them nothing else, and they would have lost their mind. So this movie literally needs no marketing except to say, this is the day it comes out, and that's only for the normal people. And still, just put Star Wars, Last Jedi, this is the day it comes out. Flash it up there for 10 seconds. Makes all the money. That's it.
New records to fall.
Yeah, it's not going to be Force Awakens, but it's still gonna make $1 billion. So we gotta start like a tally of the Disney movies that hit $1 billion. Beauty and Beast already has. We got Guardians coming next. This one's definitely hitting $1 billion. So it's like, what other two or three are gonna hit $1 billion?
So Chad, the Marvel side of things, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We'll get to that part in a second, because there's a lot of news. They opened their doors. Some strategically placed concept art was seen. Some answers were given by during question time with Mr. Feige, which we were not allowed to attend. Pepper Potts' whereabouts were not asked about. I'm very disappointed in all the reporters for not asking about Pepper Potts.
I'm not. They're right there with me. Like, who?
But the other company that is producing Marvel movies right now and producing them at an R-rated clip is Fox, and they have finally cast their Cable. Your thoughts, sir, on Josh Brolin, who had the blessing of Marvel Studios to go and play Cable for Fox?
So, first I was shocked because nobody ever said his name.
No. I mean, we heard... We heard Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights, mm-hmm. and the newspaper in the morning show that ran Chicago. It was a show where the cat would deliver the newspaper a day early, and he would have to go out and fix the thing so that they wouldn't.
Oh! I don't remember that show, and I didn't know that was him in it.
That was him. He was the lead.
I'm going to have to figure out what the show is, but I know what you're talking about.
Friday Night Lights, Bloodline, you know, that guy was in talks. Everybody wanted the guy from Avatar.
Stephen Lang.
To do it.
They never mentioned his name, but everybody wanted him. I think he was disqualified because he's older. That's it.
Right. And he has 9 Avatar movies to shoot.
No. I'll get this out the way now. Another person that jumped on the "we're shooting Avatar in this year" train, and that's Zoe Saldana. And I'm like, I appreciate you saying this. I don't believe you. I'm not calling you a liar, but I don't believe you.
Well, I mean, James did have to, you know, spend time developing and creating Avatar Land.
I understand that. I still don't believe him. And again, I need to see, like, I need to see not even a trailer. I need to see a commercial on TV that says this movie comes out in 2 weeks. That's when I believe it.
So, what did you make of it? I mean, Josh Brolin is an actor who has great comedic timing. He can play the straight man. Did it very well in Hail Caesar. He's a great actor. Brings some gravitas to a role. It's a little bit older than what I think about when I think about Cable. But your thoughts and how he's going to interact with Ryan Reynolds and their choice to go with him for Deadpool.
He's not that much older. I mean, he was way back when he was one of those choices. Warner Brothers was looking at him for Batman, you know, when they want their older Batman. So he's been on a lot of people's radar for these comic book movies. But it was just nothing about Deadpool, so I was shocked. But when I heard it and I visualized it, I'm like, I like it. Everything you said, he can play the straight man. We've seen him play the straight man in the Men in Black movie. He has the comedic timing. I think he'd work well with Ryan Reynolds. And he looks like I would picture Cable to look. I don't know how much about sound, because when I hear him, I think about him as W. So that always just sticks in my head. But I think he's going to do a good job. It's not weird, but it's just it's interesting that he's got these two high-profile comic book movies that he's doing at the same time. I know to fanboys, it's really weird to them. It's just interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, Feige points it out in the Hollywood Reporter interview where he goes, well, you know, Indiana Jones and Han Solo were the same person at the same time, and audiences were perfectly okay and could understand it. And plus, Brolin's playing a mocap character in Thanos.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, they've molded the face to look exactly like him, a lot more so than when they didn't have anybody cast, and they basically just got a stunt guy to do the mocap for him in Avengers.
Yeah.
But still, you ask the average person on the street, they're not going to be able to tell you without, by just looking at it, concept art, that's Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be that, well, confusing for a mainstream audience.
No. Most won't even know. It's just going to be people like us, and at this point, I can separate people from their different roles.
Right. So Chad, we've kind of beat around the bush here a little bit, but there was a big week at Marvel Studios this week. The first Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 reactions have hit. The playlist, the Volume 2, Awesome Mix Volume 2 soundtrack has released.
Have you looked at it yet?
I have.
I don't say a word. So it's 2 days, and I've resisted the urge to look.
Okay, so there's a song on there that, well, most of the songs on there you've heard in the trailer.
Okay.
So
I figured those.
So there's 13 tracks on the CD. And which was one of the criticisms, oddly enough, of the movie is that some people felt like the needle drops were too much.
I mean, they were like eight or nine first one.
But the song titles, some of them will fit with the motif of the movie straight away.
Okay. So this is not helping me not want to look. But I'm going to hold out. We'll see how long I can hold out.
I mean, there are a couple of track listings on there that I can automatically go in my mind and go like, I know where that one's going to be. I know where they're going to use that.
And see, that's why I'm trying not to look at it. Because that was part of the fun of the first one. I mean, I didn't know that music was going to tie in that closely. And then watching it and hearing all the needle drops, I'm like, oh, this all works. So I kind of want to have that experience too. But I also want to play all these songs in my car. Yeah. So it's killing me.
It's a good soundtrack. I mean, especially if you like 80s, 70s and 80s music, it'll be a good fit for you.
That is just right up my alley.
Yeah. So what do you think of the early reactions? I mean, they all seem to be overwhelmingly positive.
Mm-hmm.
The few negative ones that I've seen, and we do need to highlight, I think, the negative ones when you have overwhelming praises such as 89, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. The most of the negative that I've seen have been that it's too much like the first one.
Yeah.
That it just kind of feels like family infighting, and then we all just have a big group hug and come together at the end. And the needle drops, that the music's a little bit too much. That's most of the criticisms I've seen, is just like, you took everything that we liked about the first one and just copied it and didn't really update it or change it any.
Yeah, the one that sticks in my mind, the exact wording was, what felt fresh in the first one feels forced in this one. And the only other person that I really saw kind of agree, basically just like retweet and say, yep, I agree with that. Which, you know, you can go either way on. Most of the people that really liked it, they've said, you know, it's not as good as the first one, but it's still a good movie, still something you should go check out. Which is, you know, not every... If you're going into this movie expecting it to be better than the first one, I don't think that's what your expectation should be. I think it just should be to see a good movie. And then if you come out and then you decide, oh, it was better than the first one, that's fine. I don't know, we just kind of live in this place where if it's not better than the one that preceded it, people feel it's like a failure, but that's not how this
it's
works.
It's only a failure if it's Thor the Dark World and it's actually worse than the first one.
Well, yeah, Thor is. Thor 2 is.
The Sleepy Elf is much, much worse.
Yeah, of all the movies they've done, I've watched that one the least. I don't even own that one, and I own all of these. Well, that one and Iron Man 3. But Iron Man 3 is not my fault.
I mean, it's just... The reactions are overwhelmingly positive, which will create good word of mouth, which will create a bigger opening weekend. They haven't put out their own tracking. I'm sure they will after, now that, you know, the word of mouth is out there. But I suspect their low ball number would be 120.
Oh, that's super low.
Right.
To tell you how they feel about this movie, they had the critic screening on, Monday night, Tuesday night? And let them talk about it on social media immediately after. The movie doesn't open for another
3 weeks.
Well, it'll be 3 weeks, 2 weeks from tomorrow, for since where we're recording this now. The official embargo officially drops on Monday. It's still 2 weeks out. So Disney Marvel's like, we know we got a hit. We know most of these reviews are going to be good. You asked me and I said, I think it'd be 89. Anything above 80 is going to be a home run for them. So why stop all this? So
indeed, why stop it? Because James Gunn wants to do nothing else for the rest of his career.
He will
write movies like The Blanco Experiment that like five people will see, but he will. He has no desire to go off and make his small budget indie movie or shoot a Shakespeare movie in his backyard in between Marvel movies. He just wants to be the guy.
He never said he was going to do that.
He said he was going to do it. He said he's coming back for Guardians 3, and then he backs that up with Feige saying, we have every intention of James being around for more stories in the future because he just keeps coming up with these, and we'll be happy to work with him on all of them.
As long as he's coming up with these ideas, right, and they want them.
And then, not to mention the fact that we just got today official confirmation that in the original draft of the script he had Adam Warlock.
Oh, I see.
And he took him out, and he plans to, and Feige specifically said he won't be in Avengers 4, but we will bring him back in another cosmic adventure. So, we're going to get Adam Warlock, which is a huge freaking deal for the MCU and all the nerds out there.
Yeah.
It'll pay off the cocoon opening in the first Guardians.
That's right.
And he's going to oversee that. And, you know, he went straight from Guardians 1. They made the announcement of the sequel at Comic-Con that following July.
Yeah.
It was before the movie came out.
Did it?
That July Comic-Con, before the movie came out, they'd already announced Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And announced the release date for it, which at that time was the July release date that is now
for Spider-Man.
And then when they went to the theater and they revealed their slate, Thor was sitting in that April, that July spot, and they moved Guardians up
to May. Yeah.
To May. And they had Black Panther in November.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, of course, when Spider-Man came along, they bumped Thor down 4 months and 6 months back for Black Panther. Panther and put Spider-Man in July.
Yeah. But we know he's coming back for 3. He wants to come back for 3. He's already said it.
He plans to write and direct, and he wanted to get that out of the way so he didn't have to answer questions on the junket.
Yeah. Which, hey, smart move by him. That's one less thing he's got to deal with. I want to see how long before we get to 3. Because I think, if I was Marvel, I'm like, look, yeah, you want to come back? We know you got the story. Take a break. Take, like, a year off and then come back to this one. Because it can't come out until, 2021 anyway?
2020.
2020.
There are 3 open dates, Marvel movie dates, untitled Marvel movies, slated for 2020. And it's the same schedule that they are now on that they announced at the El Cid, which is basically May, July, November. May, July, November. May, July, November. Every year for in perpetuity. So they have on the books, as of right now, nothing for 2020. The last movie officially on the books for them is Spider-Man Homecoming in July of 2019. Okay. Everything else is done. They haven't announced anything for 2020. That could change at Comic-Con.
It probably will.
Which we've learned they are gonna go, according to Feige.
Yeah.
Which is a surprise to everybody, because everybody pretty much assumed, hey, the Disney convention's a week before.
And they said it last year they weren't going. So mm-hmm. This is a new development. Somebody thought it was a better idea for them to go to Comic-Con. I don't know how they're going to play it, since it's such a... It's,
how do you think that went over at the Warner Brothers lot to learn that Marvel's going?
I don't know. It, like, yeah, you kind of want to have it all to yourself. But also, at this point in WB, I don't think they can really, like, solidly announce things until they get past Justice League to be like, hey, we're past this hurdle, now we can do all these other things. I don't think you can do any of that until you're past Justice League. So, on one hand, yeah, we have this fanfare for Justice League for this one movie that I really think is like their albatross at this point. It's like, we just gotta survive it, and then we can move on. On the other hand, it's like, oh, we don't have to just have all this, we don't have to do everything. They can take some of the slack off of us so we can just get through it. So this probably, you know, half and half on WB, but I wouldn't be sweating so much if I were them. But I don't know what Marvel can...
Well, the
they gotta split their surprises now.
So the first one was what? The first Guardians was August of 15? 14. It was August of 14 because Avengers Age of Ultron is May of 15.
Is it? Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was no movie in between.
Yeah.
So it was August of 2014, and this will be, the sequel will be May of 17.
Yeah.
So that's, what, 3 years?
Yeah, so another 3 years.
Would be 2020.
Yeah, and it gives...
And they'll be in one of the Avengers movies, whether that's 3 or 4, we don't know.
Yeah. And that would effectively get... They wouldn't have to start shooting this thing until 2019. So, if James Gunn wanted to take some time off, do another project in between, he theoretically could.
And not to mention the fact that he gives Pratt time to go do Jurassic World 2.
Yeah, which he should be shooting now. I think he went straight from Star-Lord and Avengers to doing that. He's probably going to do some more pickups on the other way out. So, he's going to have a busy summer.
But I mean, it's a really interesting place for them to be, that they're going to let this guy have more of the Marvel Cinematic Universe than just about anybody. I mean, for me, it now feels like we've got the Russo brothers on Earth and we've got James Gunn covering space, and somewhere Favreau's going, I couldn't stick around.
I don't think
you had to send me over to the animation department to work on CGI movies.
I don't think he's saying that right now. Because, you know, Jungle Book worked out pretty well for him, and he's about to do The Lion King. So I think
money in the bank.
Yeah, and at that point, after Lion King, he can come back and do like, hey, I can do this other thing. Maybe I'll direct a Spider-Man movie. I don't know. But I don't think we'll get any... The only movie announcement we'll get for 2020 might be the Guardians sequel. I don't think we'll get any more.
Well, I don't think they want to date it. I mean, I think they've just gone ahead and said, hey, look, there is a Guardians.
Yeah, but... So if anybody's theory is that they're going to unveil...
Their 2020 May, July, and November releases.
I don't think they'll do that. They'll because I think they want us... A lot of that is going to hinge on what happens in these
events. Yeah, that's part of the thing. But at the same time, there are obvious... The question marks about who survives and who doesn't really hang around the original cast, yeah, who aren't getting a fourth movie. So, you know Black Panther's getting a sequel. You know Doctor Strange is getting a sequel. They just had a story today about Scott Derrickson taking a TV pilot and saying, you know, Marvel's busy right now, so I can't get around to making Doctor Strange 2 for a little while, so I'm going to do this instead to keep myself busy and to make money. So there's obviously a Doctor Strange 2 coming, because the bill always comes due, Chad. And that should be on a poster. But with Baron Mordo. But, like, there's obviously a Spider-Man sequel coming in 19. Doctor Strange is ripe for a sequel. Black Panther, if should it be received well, will be right there for a sequel. Guardians 3 is already a thing that's been announced.
Okay, so all of these that are getting sequels, like, outside of the original... Three or four.
My thing is, like, you could do a slated announcement for 2020 at Comic-Con or D23 in July, and no one would bat an eye. Because none of that information would be surprising or spoilerish for either Avengers movie.
Well, and again, this is my fanboy part. I think you can announce the sequels, but if there's anything new that we don't see coming, I don't think we'll get it now. Like, you know, I'm still holding out hope that at the end of Avengers...
Oh, yeah, your ego and Galactus...
Yeah, Galactus goes ahead and chows down on Ego, and we get a Fantastic Four movie in there.
If that's the point, then somebody better be talking to Simon Kinberg, because he's still going around talking about having all those people under contract.
I think Fox is just going to let him talk. I'm just like, just go ahead and talk. Say whatever you want. Just don't say that we have a deal with Marvel. Say whatever you want. And they can announce two of the sequels, and then they have this one date. And it's like, what is this? And you won't have any idea until... It really won't be until the second Avengers.
That gives them enough time to see the receipts from Homecoming.
I don't know if you wouldn't put another Spider-Man movie in 2020.
No, the Spider-Man sequel is already dated for 2019. Yeah. But I'm talking about it gives Fox time to see the receipts from the Sony deal to see, hey, this is financially beneficial for us.
Yeah.
Which, to be perfectly clear, because we don't want to be speculative or anything like that, there are currently no reports of Fox and Marvel entering into an agreement to share the Fantastic Four. It is surely speculation and fanboy wet dreams that would happen and the first family could return home, but more importantly, Galactus and Doom and Silver Surfer could return to Marvel.
Yeah, so, I mean, part of me just wants Marvel to get him back outright and not even have to deal with Fox in this.
And you already got a guy on staff in Peyton Reed who's pitched a Fantastic Four movie before.
Yeah, so, who was at this little shindig? You've got people in the house that want to do it. It's just a matter of getting it from Fox or working out a deal with Fox. I would just rather them get it outright from Fox. I know that you're like, at this point, we're, 2 years removed from that crappy movie?
So we're probably about August to 15.
So we're about 5 years away from them just losing the rights outright. Disney should just like, well...
We can't do anything till 2020 anyway.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't even wait them out. I'm like, look, I know you're going to try to work this deal. I know you can't make a movie in production before then because you're going to lose money. So how about I take half of my receipts from Avengers, I'm going to just slide them over to you, and you just give me these rights. I'll even throw in some merchandising rights for X-Men. Let's call it a draw. So I gave you all this money, you give me these characters, because you can't do anything with them. Your name in Fantastic Four is dirt. Dirt.
I mean, it's not even the New Line problem, where New Line just couldn't get a film off the ground with Iron Man or Captain America or Thor.
No, you've done it 3 times. One was a semi-success. The other two crashed and burned. You had one of the most popular characters in Silver Surfer. I don't understand why, but you did. And the movie with that in it is the one that sank that particular iteration of the franchise. You had another movie, which, if you ever just saw somebody throw feces against a wall, that's what that was. Dirt. You're done. Everybody knows it. Just take the money and run.
The Fox's iteration of the Fantastic Four, as you said on that particular podcast, is covered in toxic waste and cannot be cleaned.
No, can't. Just got to purge it and start again.
So, I mean, it's interesting to think about Comic-Con and D23 and what kind of announcements we might get and what their 2020 slate might be. But it's interesting to me, like I said, that we're going to have basically the Russos taking care of the Earth and James Gunn overseeing the galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
So the reactions were really good. Gunn confirmed that he's back for Guardians 3, and Feige had a conversation in which he did confirm a couple of things. Firstly, that Spider-Man's in both parts of the Infinity War, mm-hmm. or what was the Infinity War.
Yes.
He's in both Avengers 3 and Avengers 4, which confirms our theory that Marvel's going to get 3 bites of the apple to Sony's 2 under the current deal, because Feige also confirmed that the deal runs out after the Homecoming sequel.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really anything that we didn't already speculate on or know.
Yeah, and I mean, some people see that and they get worried. They're like, the deal's going to run out, and then Spider-Man's going to go back to Sony, and it's going to suck again.
He's going to get pulled into this auxiliary shared universe that Sony's creating with Avi that Marvel has nothing to do with and never will.
Never. And I understand why people are concerned about that, because there's nothing official. But after Homecoming comes out, and after Sony gets their check, they're going to be like, why would we ever not do this again? And they will sign, they will give another extension. But it's never going to be more than like 2 or 3 movies, because that's the way this works. So if that's the kind of thing that's going to give you anxiety, then be prepared. Every 2 or 3 movies, we're going to go, when you get to the second one, they're going to be like, the deal runs out at this point. And you're going to be sitting there like, well, why would they do this? Because it's Hollywood and it's business. But they're going to sign as long as the movies make money. Unless one of the parties decides they don't need the other. And really, in this situation, only one of those parties can say that, and that is Marvel. And Marvel can say, kick the bricks anytime they want, except they love Spider-Man. They want him in the universe. Now, if the other party decides, hey, they just propped up our franchise, let's go take it and do all this stuff.
And give it to Avi.
Yeah. And then you can run screaming to the roofs, because they will murder Spider-Man again. But, you know, just calm down. It's going to be fine. We will have Spider-Man for a few years. Well, we'll probably have Spider-Man for a long time.
Well, like I said, two iterations. That this Spider-Man will have 3 bites of the apple for Marvel, Civil War, Infinity War 1 and Infinity War 2, or Avengers 3 and Avengers 4, and then the 2 Homecoming sequels will be Sony money.
I don't think the Avengers movies get, like, a Spider-Man bump. Like, they're going to make their $1 billion anyway. That's what they do.
For now. I mean, we haven't seen an Avengers movie that makes less than $1 billion.
Yeah, for now.
With the way they're going to market that as the culmination of the Marvel Cinematic Universe's first 3 phases, I cannot really see a way that doesn't make $1 billion.
Particularly the 3. I think 3 is a shoe-in for $1 billion. 4, depends on what happens, but
because three is a direct sequel to Civil War.
Yeah. So three should be like the big, everything's led up to this point, and four is like the resolution. You know, they'll structure it differently, but that's basically what it is. So three will make up a billion for sure. Four, if everybody likes three, four is going to make a billion too. But so the Avengers don't need the Spider-Man bump. Spider-Man needs the, not even Avengers, but he needs the Marvel bump. So I think the relationship, even though Sony's only going to get two bites, they're going to make more off of the Spider-Man character than Marvel will.
I'd be inclined to agree. And the fact, again, that Tom Holland is so young is also going to help because he can renew his contract and he can be Spider-Man for more than three movies, which would be a first.
He could be Spider-Man up until, you know, if he wanted to, at least tell as old as Evans is, and Evans is my age, so 35. And that's, hell, that's, he's pushing Hugh Jackman terms then, because it'll be like 17 years if he wanted to ride it out.
So, post-credit sequences, those are a thing for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And apparently the universe, the internet is losing its damn mind over the notion of five post-credit sequences in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah, that's right, it is five.
Which I'm not freaking out about, because I rewatched Guardians. The Baby Groot scene that everybody fondles over, I think that's the kind of thing he's talking about.
Yeah.
I don't think he's talking about your traditional stop everything, here's a credit that's going to set up five more movies, now let's go back to the credits.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a bunch of those. Like, I mean, the two in Guardians are basically just like that. They're extensions of the movie, and they're just fun little tags on the
which
movie.
Ticked everybody off that they set that entire movie, and then they did the little Howard the Duck thing at the end.
I wasn't amused. I didn't care. But this movie led into...
Well, I mean, if you think about it, none of the phase two credit sequences did anything major to set up anything to come. Because the Iron Man 3 post-credit sequence is Banner being revealed as the person that Tony is talking to the entire time doing the voiceover of the movie.
Yeah.
Thor the Dark World, it's Lady Sif bringing the ether to the Collector. So it's basically just introducing the Collector, who you see in Guardians, who explains what the hell the Infinity Stones are.
Yeah.
The post-credit stinger for Winter Soldier is...
It's Bucky finding out who he is. It's one of them. I think there are two.
Yeah, there are two. And the other the one twins. Is the setting up of Wanda and Quicksilver. And Peter. And then, obviously, like I said, the Guardians post-credit tag is...
Dancing Baby Groot,
and then Howard the Duck.
Mm-hmm.
So none of them overly set up anything. Like the twins and, you know, Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. being two sides of the same coin that are no longer currency is about as close to a, you know, what we were getting in the first phase that we got.
Yeah.
And so far in phase three, we've gotten Thor talking to Doctor Strange, which is a direct setup for Ragnarok. And we've gotten...
Is Ant-Man 2 or 3? Is Ant-Man phase 2 or 3?
He's phase 2.
Phase 2. Okay, so that one is a direct lead in the Civil War. Ant-Man and... I know Ant-Man...
The Ant-Man tag is a scene from Civil War.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Doctor Strange. It was the same kind of thing. They had scenes they were shooting, and they just took those scenes, stuck them at the end of the movies. So those two are directly tied into the movies that are coming after. But I think that's it.
Civil War, the post-credit tag is, one of them is Spidey finding out about his Spidey signal.
And the other one is Wakanda.
Right. And so, both those set up things
that
are to come.
So I think, since we're getting five, I think one of them is going to be a setup. I think the other four are just going to be fun things from the movie. One of them, mark my words, will be Howard the Duck again.
Yes. That's already been said.
Let's see. I didn't even know.
That's already been said that they they double down on the Howard the Duck.
Okay.
With Seth Green voicing Howard the Duck.
Yeah, and that's the only reason I said it, because I've seen pictures of Seth Green at the carpet. And granted, they could have brought him back because he did it the first time. But I'm like, nope. One of those scenes is Howard the Duck. So.
Which raises an interesting question now that you own Lucasfilm at Disney.
Does it? Because I think most people would like to forget that Lucasfilm has something to do with that.
Yeah, it has an awful lot to do with that.
Oh, I know.
A lot of children mentally scarred for the rest of their childhoods because their parents took them to see the cartoon movie made by George Lucas.
Bruh, that's... I watched that like in the last 6 months, and there's that one scene with the girl duck. Well, there's two scenes in particular that like really, really messed up. The girl duck scene and the attempted duck on human relations scene. Both of those things are really, really messed up, and I don't know who in their right mind thought that this was the kind of thing you put in a movie. I don't care who you think you are. None of these things are good ideas. I'm not even talking about you changing the whole premise of Howard the Duck. Those two things, like, somebody should have been fired. Like, for even suggesting that. The fact that it made it onto the movie screen. Who directed this movie? I gotta know now. Who did this?
Well, I mean, the movies of that era that get talked about the most are Howard the Duck and Super Mario Brothers. Both of which are on equally bad terms and had repercussions for decades.
I haven't watched Super Mario Brothers in a year. I know it's that bad and I kind of want to. I'm not paying money for it, though, so that's why...
It's on Netflix.
Is it?
Yes.
Since when?
It's been up there.
Oh, I must have been... I look every now and then. I must have stopped looking for one. Dang it! This is I'm going down this rabbit hole tonight. Oh, hold on. Who directed this?
Well, it's not just about who directed it. Somebody produced it. Studio head greenlit it.
I mean, we know one of the producers, George. What?
Imagine being a parent and taking your child to see the Howard the Duck movie.
What was it rated? It had to be rated R. And if it was rated R, then it's your own fault. No! It's PG! What? What is wrong? Wow. These parents really walked in there and they thought everything was fine. They scarred the... Man, somebody should sue George Lucas for this. I don't know who this dude is. Willard Hayek or something? I don't know who you are. And he wrote it, too. That's why it got in there, because he thought it was a good idea to write.
He never got heard from again.
With good reason. I'm going down the rabbit hole of Howard the Duck and how this happened one day. Because this, I did not know this was PG, and it is. This is a travesty. Oh, he's one of George Lucas' friends. Yes, sue George Lucas. Oh, he wrote the screenplay for American Graffiti. He wrote all of the. He wrote American Graffiti. He wrote Temple of Doom. Yeah, but all the movies he directed suck. All right. Any friends with Francis Ford Coppola? Of course. So,
yeah, they all went to USC film school together. Him and Ford Coppola and Scorsese and Spielberg. It's like,
so we know who the least talented of that group was.
Yeah,
and we know that his screenplays worked best when he was constrained. And I don't know why they decided to let him loose.
George just didn't want to have his name on the product.
It's his company. It was his idea. Nah, man, somebody. We need a class action lawsuit against George Lucas. That you screwed up a whole bunch of kids. I am glad my parents didn't take me, scar me for life.
Okay, now that we've established that the Marvel version of the Howard the Duck movie will be
I mean, honestly, there's only one way you can go from the one we already got, and that's just up. So
not really. You could go the Robot Chicken way.
I haven't seen it.
The Robot Chicken Star Wars, like the Family Guy way of, I mean, it's Seth Green. You can make a raunchy R-rated, you know.
Howard the Duck is a raunchy. He's a raunchy character, but not that kind of raunchy. That is just, like, wrong on all these levels.
In their defense, there probably wasn't a PG-13 rating at the time. So films were probably only either G, PG, or R.
Again, the two scenes I just said, that should have bumped it up to R. Right off the bat. Those two scenes are what made me think this movie's rated R.
So, again, somebody at the Motion Picture Association of America screened that film and gave them notes.
Hold on, this movie's only like 3 years after before Batman, and Batman was PG-13. I need to know when PG-13 happened so I can properly chastise them for this.
The MPAA screens movies and gives you notes on what you need to cut in order to get a certain rating. Just ask Scorsese, who screened the 4-hour cut of Wolf of Wall Street and got an NC-17. And was told, cut this, which boggles my mind at what they had to cut to get that movie from an NC-17 to an R.
Yeah, because, it's, woof. And this is after PG-13. PG-13 came in 84. So, somebody got some explaining to do, because none of this is right. Let's go, because it seems like I can rant about this all day.
There's 5 post-credit scenes. One will probably set up a future movie. The others will feature Howard the Duck, Baby Groot, and Ego the Living Planet getting eaten by Galactus. But
No, he gets eaten in Avengers, not that.
Well, we don't even know that he survives, because it looks like they have to blow Ego the Living Planet up, although they claim he's not the villain. I find it fascinating that Gunn says, like, they get rid of the daddy issue in the first act.
I mean, when he was talking about the trailer that first introduced Ego and said that he was his father, somebody asked him, because, you know, James Gunn is, like, fabulous on social media. He will answer questions all day. He said, I let them put this in the trailer because this happens very early on in the movie, and Ego is a central character to the movie. That's why it's in the trailer. So I'm not surprised that he said that.
Could you imagine how crazy it would have been if we'd have Adam Warlock and Ego the Living Planet?
It's just too much. It's too much. I mean, you're bringing in Nebula and Mantis and
Yondu
into the team. You're introducing Aisha and all of them and Ego and a new leader for the Ravagers. Adam Warlock's a complicated dude. That's a whole bunch of stuff going on as it is. You made the right call of cutting down the Warlock.
So, another thing that Feige said along with the Spider-Man 4, or the Avengers 4, and confirmation for Spidey and the Sony deal running out, was another thing he said was that they don't have any plans to move in the R-rated direction, and that he thinks that people have learned the wrong lesson from the Deadpool Logan type of thing, which was those stories work not because they're R-rated, but because of the characters and the movies and the stories are more true to the intent of the character.
Exactly. Yeah, and leave it to Kevin Feige to speak the truth, because that's exactly what it is.
Mean the Fantastic Four shouldn't be a team that are stuck in an underground bunker that don't see light ever?
Did that happen in that movie? Because, you know, I've only watched it the one time.
Remember, they don't see trees until the very end.
I thought it was
Doom has a very unique skill set, as in anything that they needed him to do at a certain time.
The movie comes on like HBO now. If it's on, I will turn it there to see the parts that are in the library, and I turn it off.
The guy who ghost directed those reshoots apparently is the guy who's going to direct your next X-Men movie.
Again, I have my issues with Simon Kinberg. He's fine in the Star Wars universe. Stay out of everything else. But yes, the lessons to learn from those movies is that it has nothing to do with the rating and everything to do with the story and the characters. And those stories and those characters call for R ratings. I don't think any character that's in the Marvel universe proper needs to be R. So there's no reason for them to go R. Their most R-rated character is in Netflix. That's the Punisher.
Well, the only way that I could see an R-rated movie is if you actually did Demon in the Bottle.
Which then...
Not which they came the closest to doing in Iron Man
2,
which is a whole muddled mess because of a whole bunch of different things. Yep. But it does have Pepper Potts in it. So, we finally got some news on Captain Marvel, which is their March 2019 release. It releases like 6 weeks before the Avengers. It's like the Avengers, the final Avengers movie is like the first week of May 2019, and then Captain Marvel's the first week of March 2019.
Yeah.
It's really close. Obviously, it's had a star attached since last July with Brie Larson, who's posted photos of herself on social media, reading up on her Carl Danvers comic books, speaking at various press junkets for different movies that she's done, like Kong Skull Island, about it. She said that she's prepared for the backlash of Onslaught because the character means different things to different people and they have their different ideas of what Captain Marvel should be. It does seem like she'll have some creative input on the character. And the film now has concept art, which was seen at Marvel Studios, along with concept art of Thanos and Black Panther.
They had concept art of Ant-Man and the Wasp, and they showed them dailies from Black Panther. Because it was Black Panther was...
Yeah, shooting as a globe-trotting James Bond-esque adventure.
Yeah, and actually, I think it wrapped shooting the day after.
Yeah, a couple of days after, yeah.
And apparently all that footage is, like, really good, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it will make all the money in Black History Month in February.
I'm so ready for this movie.
I'm so ready for the fact for them to be peeing in their own cornflakes when they announce, hey, Chris Evans is in Black Panther. The one white guy along with Andy Serkis in the cast.
What's his name? Morgan Freeman. Not Morgan Freeman.
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman, yeah. He's in it too. If Cap is in it, he should be at the end in the teaser, in the stinger, and he doesn't need to be announced. But I can live with anything else that's like 5 minutes. That's fine. But that footage got people really excited. People really enjoyed the Ant-Man footage, I'm trying to remember. We get more Giant-Man because they saw concept footage of him being Giant-Man and using himself as a bridge for people to run over. And something with him shooting like a Coke bottle at people. And there was one other thing that I can't remember. And then the Thanos stuff. And then Captain Marvel, which...
It sounded like most of the Thanos stuff was some of the stuff they showed in that highlight package.
And, their announcement video thing?
Yeah.
Okay. They showed Thor stuff, too. Because they talked to...
With T.D.
He was there, and Peyton Reed was there. It's
a weird little open house thing.
Yeah. All of the outlets was like, Marvel doesn't really show us anything. And they don't really answer a whole bunch of questions like this. And we didn't even know. They just brought us in. It's like, before the movie, it's like, here, come see. We renovated some stuff. You can see all this stuff. And I'll answer anything you ask right now. Shoot. And, you know, when you drop a surprise like that on people, they will ask you some questions. But then you get some things that you just slip through the cracks because nobody's thinking about that. We showed you all this cool stuff. You don't think about all the questions you want
to
ask.
You don't have to ask about Pepper Potts.
Only you.
So, there is... they have direct... The Captain Marvel movie got directors. Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. And they are basically being met with a... Who?
yes, they are. I had never heard of them. When in the source they said... What was their movie?
Mississippi Grind.
And there's
Mississippi Grind.
And there's another movie they had worked on earlier. Is a little bit older. I don't remember the name of that one.
It's kind of a funny story. It's kind of a funny story.
That's the name of it?
I think so.
Okay, we'll go with that. Where is this thing? Oh, okay. I kept pulling up his actual quote about the directors, because this was from Variety?
Yeah.
And they hadn't confirmed it, but apparently he's confirmed it today because he's, like, said why he picked him. And I'm just going to read. So, this is Kevin Feige on these two directors.
This is Kevin Feige not answering our questions.
Okay, we met with lots and lots of people, as we always do, and had multiple meetings, and Anna and Ryan just had an amazing way of talking about Carol Danvers and talking about her journey. We want filmmakers that can help us focus on and elevate the character journey.
So we're cheap and not looked for by anybody else.
So it doesn't get lost among the spectacle. We're pretty good at showing spectacle at Marvel Studios.
Spectacle that can be done by us and helmed by them.
And have an amazing team that can help with that.
But for years and years to come, because they are cheap and able to be kept around.
But when we're filling a director's chair or chairs, we want people who are focused on the emotional journey, the humor, the surprising twist, in terms of a singular character journey, which is what Captain Marvel is. When you look at the work that Ryan and Anna have done in the past, they are all amazing and very diverse characters and journeys, and that impressed us. And this came, all of this broke the day after the Marvel tour, because they specifically asked about Captain Marvel director, and he said, we haven't made an announcement on our directors yet. And it was noted that he said directors with an S, and people just thought it was a slip of the tongue, but this is why.
Okay, so here's my stated position on this that I tweeted to you. I am ticked off. Jennifer Kent is sitting out there. Brand name solo female directors are sitting out there. And you have to go get the one that's tied to a dude. Like, I get young, up-and-coming, undiscovered, cheap talent that you can, you know, it comes from a TV background, comes from a indie movie background. It's very amenable, you know, not very, can fit within the confines of a system, loves the character, has a good take, yada yada. Feige's own self-professed model is that their in-house writers come up with a spec script, they give that spec script to directors that they're looking at. They go away with the spec script, they come up with their pitch, and they come back and repitch it to Marvel with their intent and their vision. So, you know, hence the reason why somebody like Ava or Edgar isn't going to fit in that model, because they want to write their own stuff. They don't want to take somebody else's stuff and just repitch it. Patty Jenkins. Wonder Woman's had two female directors. One of whom wanted a talking tiger and got fired for it unjustly. And the other one is, you know, making probably the most singular film in the DC Expanded Universe. With the most universally recognizable female character in existence. Carol Danvers and Captain Marvel is not universally recognizable. Not by people outside of the comic book world. And it's their first female standalone solo movie because, you know, they didn't go and do a Black Widow movie because Scarlett Johansson, A, was busy, and B, it'd pretty much have to be a movie set in the past, so you really didn't want to do a movie that would be set in the past in your current timeline because it would confuse audiences, yada yada. So, this is your... Everybody complains... Hey, your villains suck and you don't have a female standalone movie. And this female standalone movie's been announced for 3 years. And DC beat you to the punch. They're going to make theirs first. They're going to release theirs first. And they're going to have an all-female director. And you, in all this time, with all these different directors you talked to, including Jennifer Kent, and, you know, you don't come away with a solo female director. You've got to get the person who's tied to a dude. It looks really bad, man. It looks really bad. Now, they're not going to get any heat for it because, you know, Guardians, they're announcing it right when they're going to get this huge amount of good press for Guardians. And, like you said, they can say, hey, look, they're a package deal. We couldn't take one and not the other. You know, all of their work creatively as both writers, producers, and directors is together. You know, we worked pretty well with the Russo brothers, you know. But I was disappointed that it wasn't just a brand name woman directing it. And I don't like that we have to get to a point where, for diversity's sake, we have a woman directing a movie about women. But when DC is doing that and getting a lot of praise for it, and you're getting flack on a daily basis for 3 years about that Captain Marvel movie that you keep pushing back, you kind of need to make a positive momentum statement.
Well, they had to, much like they had to hire a black guy or black person to direct.
Yeah, because we're both of the assertion that she was interviewed for Black Panther.
Yeah, Ava was interviewed for Black Panther. There's no doubt. Much like you had to get a black person to do Black Panther, you had to get a woman to do Captain Marvel. Would it have been better to have a solo woman? I mean, we wouldn't have this conversation. And having one of these conversations means that it would have been better if there was just a woman. I wish I knew these two people's work better than I do. I actually don't know anything because it's my first time ever hearing of them. But everything that's come out has made it seem like they've worked their whole career together. This is, they're a package deal, so...
I've seen it's kind of a funny story, and I liked it. But it, nothing about it jumps out at you and says, Captain Marvel directors. Now, that being said, nothing about Community leaps out at you and says Winter Soldier.
Yeah, or Civil War, or freaking Avengers, yeah.
Well, nothing about Slither says Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, so...
Now, on the other hand, Joe Johnson's whole background makes him the perfect fit to do Captain America, the First Avenger. Kenneth Burr's whole background in Shakespearean filmmaking and in Shakespearean plays makes him perfect to do the first Thor movie. Favreau's love of the Iron Man character is, and Downey's iconic performance is a reason to make the Iron Man movie.
Well, it's... Just from that, it seems like they're moving away from, you know, the surefire things, and they're going with these people that nobody would think to put in charge.
And no one thought about Peyton Reed because, like, it was just like they're just trying to find somebody to fill Edgar's seat.
Yeah,
they want to make this movie. They have already committed to it. It has a release date. They're chasing it. They weren't anticipating this director switch. They just need somebody to come in and do the job.
Mm-hmm.
So no one was thinking, oh, wait, the guy from Bring It On's going to do an Ant-Man movie?
He did Bring It On. I didn't know that. Yeah, if I'd have known that, I'd be like, what the hell? But but that goes to the thing. Like, they're...
But the one who did Warm Bodies with Nick Holt.
Yeah.
That guy keeps coming... His name keeps coming up in comic book superhero movie director discussion. He keeps getting passed over. Jennifer Kent, the Babadook, keeps getting brought up and keeps getting passed over. You know, I'm glad Kathryn Bigelow has decided to stay out of this realm because it looks like Detroit's going to be freaking awesome.
Yes, I watched Trevor.
And timely. So.
So, I hear what you're saying. I understand. And I understand the argument. My stance is, would it have been better as a solo woman? Sure. However, Marvel decided on this team, and at this point, outside of the guy that did Thor 2, Alan Taylor, they kind of like, and you might make an argument for Shane Black, because it's Iron Man 3 is clearly a Shane Black movie, but it's still, you know, it's still good. I like it. They've hit on their directors.
It's a subversive thing. They were looking to do... Iron Man 3, I think, is Marvel at a point where they're like, if this Avengers thing works, we're going to have people expecting that every time out. And we're going to have to answer these questions about S.H.I.E.L.D. and about why, if Iron Man has a problem, he just doesn't call up the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, let's basically make a movie where S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't exist. Let's make a movie where basically we just reference the Battle of New York and deal with Tony's PTSD from it, but don't really reference it in any kind of meaningful way.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, that's what leads to kind of some of the speculation about, well, does Iron Man 3 take place after Captain America the Winter Soldier? Because does it take place after the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Because why wouldn't S.H.I.E.L.D. have seen that helicopter coming and intercepted it, you know?
Yeah. So they've largely hit on their directors. So the reason it's not a bigger deal is that and now, it is half the team is a woman, and Marvel has earned this level of trust.
And Alan Taylor is the rare exception. Most people who don't like the Marvel process get out early. You know, Edgar got out. Ava didn't even start. There are some people who just know that that's not for them. Alan Taylor took that job over from a woman, ironically, on Thor 2. On Thor 2, and was the hot name from Game of Thrones. And really the only scenes in that movie that scream Alan Taylor are the funeral scenes. Everything else just kind of feels flat.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because Chris Yost has a writing credit on Waititi's Thor Ragnarok that everybody loves and looks awesome. And he's the guy who wrote Thor the Dark World.
What? Is it?
I think there's like four credited writers on Thor Ragnarok, actually.
That's what I was going to ask. I don't know who's all the writers. If it's just him, then yeah, but you know, there's probably more than one. And I'm sure Taika had a hand in...
Clearly.
Yeah. So, not to worry about that. So, all in all, I get where you're coming from, but the more people are going to be like, you know, Marvel earned this level of trust, and they got a team that does include a woman, so we'll roll with it.
So, let's move on to some quick hits. Speaking of Star Wars, we got word from Lando Calrissian himself that Billy Dee Williams said he will not be in Episode 8.
I'm kind of sad because I would like to see old Lando before I see new Lando. But, you know, if they didn't have a part for him, if it was going to feel forced, why do it? I hope he's in 9.
Feel forced.
A pun that I didn't even mean.
Yeah, he's... I hope he's in 9 too, but I also hope I get a bunch of dead zombie Ewoks in 9. So, I mean, there are a bunch of things I'd like in 9, but...
I want you to not get that. I want that to never happen.
Dead zombie Ewoks, hey, it taught a whole generation about death. When sad little Ewok man died.
Since I didn't see that one until I was older, it taught me about joy, because sad little Ewok man happened.
Alright, so in the other Star Wars news, Star Wars Rebels will be concluding this season and will be a direct lead-in to the Rogue One-ish era.
Look, I need Star Wars Rebels to come on and get with the program and get on Netflix so I can watch the whole thing. I'm this far behind because I didn't get on the train when it first started. And when I found out it was good, it was like halfway through the first season. And I'm a completist, so I have to watch from beginning to end. But they don't put it on streaming, so...
Which is odd because it's a Disney property, and every other Disney property is already on Netflix.
Yeah, so just go ahead and do me a solid and put it on Netflix.
A solid bender on a weekend is to have you can watch Mighty Ducks 1, Mighty Ducks 2, and Heavyweights.
So
all on Netflix.
Again, this is where being an audio medium doesn't help. The minute you started saying Mighty Ducks, I started shaking my head no.
Not a hockey guy.
No, Mighty Ducks came around in that time where I was
92.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to see this. And then subsequently, I'm like, I don't like any of this because I was forced to see it. So, yeah, no.
So, we also learned that they have officially ruled out any part for Carrie Fisher in 9. Which, you know, we've talked on this podcast about the quote-unquote secret meeting that we were all waiting for the white smoke to come out of about what they were going to do. And Kathleen Kennedy having to come out and address rumors of digital recreations and...
Yeah, so, I mean, we still don't know what they're doing, but officially, we just know Carrie won't be in the movie. She didn't say Princess Leia won't be in the movie, but Carrie in any form will not be in the movie.
So, Will Smith is in talks to take over Robin Williams' role as the genie in Aladdin. Moves from Dumbo to Aladdin.
So I saw this yesterday, and much like
really doesn't want to do Bad Boys 3 and 4.
Apparently not. Much like Alfred in The Dark Knight, some people just want to see the world burn. So I saw this on Twitter, and I immediately put it on Facebook because I know how my friends are. And I watched them cry tears of 90s babies as they were, like, expressing displeasure of Will being the genie. Personally,
it works. I mean, if you get Fresh Prince era Will Smith to do it and not, you know, Hancock era, I'm Legend era Will Smith, Suicide Squad led, you know, Will Smith.
I don't have a strong feeling either way. I mean, you're not replacing Robin Williams. And that's going to be everybody's first problem is when they hear Aladdin in Disney, they're going to think of the genie that's Robin Williams. You're never going to get that. So if you can't start from a place where you're getting past
that. It's the reason there will never be another Ferngully movie, because you can't have Batty.
My daughter watched that movie like 2 weeks ago. That movie's terrible.
That movie is amazing.
That movie is this is where our age difference comes in.
That movie is amazing. Ferngully, The Last Rainforest taught an entire generation that preserving trees was cool, but, man.
I love cartoons. I'm a grown man, I love cartoons. But this movie came out when I was like 12, like 10, between 10 and 12.
1994, 93.
Oh, so I was 12, and my little cousins wanted to watch this movie. I saw parts of it, and I'm like, I want no part of this. And when I watched it with her, I'm like, this movie is stupid. And I left. So, I can care less about this movie. Now, we can talk about real things like Aladdin. And I'm like, that's it. I can go home and watch that tonight. But Ferngully, nobody's thinking about Ferngully except for you and my daughter. And that's because she's 8. She just watched it.
They're going to reboot Ferngully, The Last Rainforest. And everybody's going to lose their minds.
Because they don't know what a rainforest is. They don't know what a rainforest is. They're gone. The point of that movie is we're killing rainforests. Guess what? Nobody got the message. They're done. They don't know what a rainforest is.
Well, then the Amazon do. Yes, and then also we're going to get a Pagemaster sequel with Macaulay Culkin having his son go to the library and learn.
And this is where the age gap really comes in, because I have no idea what this is.
All right. So, I mean, I'm okay with it. If he had been cast in 92... when he was just coming on the scene as the genie. That the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air Will Smith, the likable, affable, Grammy-winning Will Smith, would have been fine in the role. Because he has that kind of, you know, it won't be the fast-paced, kinetic genie, because that's Williams' comedy. That's part of the genius, and ironically, I think part of the reason he turned to suicide was because he knew the disease that he was going to have was going to take that away from him. And he didn't want to, I don't think, go through the struggle of finding his identity
again.
But his Will Smith's genie will be that flashy, peppy, happy, energetic guy, which is what that role needs.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not going to be that far off from what his was.
I'm not completely sold. I don't know who else they can get, but if they got Will, I would be fine. I do think, yeah, like the
late. I mean, it beats my fan casting was Pacino.
No.
I love Pacino as the genie talking to a couple of Middle Eastern kids.
But that was the other thing. I forget who it was, but they posted.
It's okay. Leaves room for him to do alter ego.
Some unknown is going to be. Is going to get this role and play against Will Smith and make his career, which is probably true. But the key to this, well, I still don't understand. I still don't know what a Guy Ritchie Aladdin movie is going to look like. But
you do know what a Guy Ritchie King Arthur's movies is going to look like.
But I can see. Well, I guess because I've seen it, seen parts of it, I can see that more than Aladdin. So if he can make that work. The key to that movie getting over is just going to be people letting go of Robin Williams just being the genie and accepting whoever is in the genie.
Okay, so I got over the fact that Angela Lansbury did not voice Mrs. Potts in the new Beauty and the Beast. I was okay with Sir Ian McKellen playing Lumiere.
Like,
Clogsworth. Like, I was fine with it. Like, you can't get all of those guys to come back with the exception of James Earl Jones as Mufasa, because you're kind of hard to replace that.
Okay, but you're more rational about this than most people. You watch enough movies and you see how this thing goes, so you're more rational about this.
Yes, because these movies are only being made to hit on the nostalgia of us all and to make us get into our feels. Beauty and the Beast made $1 billion, and it made $1 billion because all of us are in our 30s now, we all have kids now, and we all want our kids to understand and have the feels that we had back in 92. And it's the same thing with Aladdin in 94. They will do it, and it will make $1 billion because we all want to go back in our feels and relive our childhoods and force our children to relive our childhoods. Because my children will hate me because I will make them march through the cold winter's forest to chop down a real Christmas tree, and it will not fit inside my apartment.
Your kids will hate you for that. I don't force my child to relive my childhood. She just likes it. But my concern is the difference between Beauty and the Beast and this is that Beauty and the Beast purposely invoked everything about that cartoon. So when people saw it, even if they may have not liked Emma Watson as Belle or her singing voice, because I've heard all those complaints, they were still like, this looks like the movie that I grew up watching as a kid. I don't see that from, I haven't seen anything from Aladdin, but I don't see that from a Guy Ritchie Aladdin.
And see, that's where I think Alan Horn and Disney's like, yo, bro, formula works for Marvel, works for Star Wars. You see what we just did here? You know, we did Cinderella beat for beat the way that it was done in the animated. We changed a few things up, like made sure mice didn't talk. But, like, we made the same movie again, just with live actors, and it made money. We just did this Beauty and the Beast remake, and it made a lot of money, and it's basically the animated movie with live actors. So that's what we're looking for you to do here.
And like Cinderella and like Maleficent to a lesser extent, I think they have more leeway because they're older. And while we watched them as kids, we grew up on Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, so all three of the major the heavy hitters from that classic era of Disney, Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, and Aladdin are all three going to get done within the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised they haven't fast-tracked their Little Mermaid project, especially after Sophia broke off of the one that was over at Sony.
Somebody did it.
By the way, The Beguiled is looking like an amazing...
What's Beguiled?
The new Sofia Coppola movie that had its trailer that is basically going to be what Interview with the Vampire was back in the early 90s. It's going to... It will erase your thoughts of Southern Gothic vampire, like, it will erase Twilight from your mind.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look for the trailer.
And it has Kirsten Dunst, Nicole Kidman, and...
Oh, that's the one that people like Kirsten Dunst's performance, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's her director. They've known each other since Kirsten was, like, 16 years old, and she's now in her 30s.
Yeah.
And they've worked together on Marie Antoinette... They worked together on Virgin Suicides. They have this rapport. She's coming off of a resurgence with the Fargo, her time on Fargo last season, which brought a lot of critical acclaim back to her after she kind of, you know, wandered in the wilderness for a little while. I'm surprised they haven't gone that route to fast track a live action Little Mermaid movie.
Whoever's making the other one, they made it. It's coming out this year. I saw the
Selena Gomez one, that Selena Gomez was attached to at some point with Sofia Coppola?
I don't know. I guess. Because I just saw the poster when they had CinemaCon. They showed all the posters, and that was one of them. Because I just remember the image of her as the Little Mermaid, and they had the website at the bottom. And I went to the website, and the website didn't work.
Yeah. So. But, I mean, that swath from Little Mermaid to Hercules... Basically, everything's getting remade. Lion King, Beauty and the Beast,
Aladdin,
and Mulan.
Yeah.
You're not touching Tarzan for obvious reasons. And Hercules...
Nah, we just had two.
Yeah.
In a year span. So I doubt we'll get one of
those. And we already had a soft version of it as Percy Jackson. Neither one of those movies really worked.
Yeah, that's true.
So... Lastly, your thoughts on the Kingsman Secret Service and Matthew Vaughn and his iteration that's trying to remind you that Colin Farrell's gonna be not Colin Colin Farrell Firth. Colin Firth is gonna be in this movie.
Did you actually see the teaser?
I did not.
This is the definition of a teaser trailer. So it's 15 seconds long, and they just supercut the whole trailer. So there's probably about 20 scenes in this 15 seconds, but they just speed through them all. So you actually have to watch the trailer. You have to sit there and pause the whole time. You can't see much. They left Colin Firth out of this. You see some of Eggsy with Channing Tatum's dude bro, U.S. Secret Service guy. I don't remember if you see Halle Berry or not. But yeah, it just goes by really fast, and it's the definition of a teaser. So I just think we're getting a full trailer probably before Guardians.
Well, I mean, it's July, right?
July, August, one of those.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's time to actually put out marketing material.
Yeah. Speaking of, I've brought this up before, but it's about, 6 weeks until Wonder Woman. And what you got?
There is a poster. That's it.
There's a poster. We got that last trailer, and that they're doing this marketing where it's Wonder Woman Wednesday on social media, but like I need to see their big push now. I think this movie is going to be the best outside of Man of Steel DC movie that DCEU movie we've had. It's the most insulated for
3-star match.
Yeah, it's the most insulated from everything else. Everything's there to just get you through and have enough acclaim to get you to Justice League so you can just get over that hump. But they need to market it. And I keep bringing it up because I keep seeing it on social media from different people that are like, where's the Wonder Woman stuff?
Which is a first alert to studios not being confident in their material.
Yeah, and I don't think they have any reason to be for this one. The only thing that makes me think is not that, is the fact that King Arthur movie comes out from before then. It's from Warner Brothers too. And there's even less marketing for that. But I don't think they have confidence in that one. I think they should have confidence in Wonder Woman. It's built to make money.
Yeah, it is built to make money as long as the last night stays 3 weeks away.
That's stupid, stupid movie. We could have got through the show without you saying it.
The Last Night, Transformers, The Last Night, the first of 14 Michael Bay written and directed Transformers movies coming to a cinema near you, June 2017.
There was actually absolutely no reason for you to bring that up today. None!
Well, I just did.
That's just
hey, did you see Eastwood, Clint Eastwood, not Scott, who is making money off of Fast and the Furious now. Little nobody. Clint is going to make an ISIS, foiling an ISIS plot movie as his next feature film.
No, I didn't.
Old Man Yells at Empty Chairs at it again.
Clint. Just stop, man.
All right, that'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
And at The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.